Yeah, thanks very much. I'll be trying to go a little bit more towards the dark side. I mean, you've been talking about the good side of food and nutrition and the value of food. And then, of course, food also kills, and it kills all over the world. That's why we should also be talking a little bit about food safety, the dark side of food and food production. There are some examples from in the food safety area that could actually be used well, I think, when we look at the full international scale of the problem and how to deal with things at the international level. Because nutrition has not been dealt with at the international level, food safety has. There are many, probably some social scientists can give you some 10 different suggestions why that is. I think it's very simple. The food industry was very interested in being able to export food 40, 50 years ago all over the globe. They started to use food additives. They wanted to have the same rules all over in relation to food additives, so Codex Alimentarius was created and is dealing with safety problems. Now, of course, food additives, contrary to popular belief, is actually not a problem anymore because it was dealt with in a scientific way. But there are lots of other contaminants, chemical and microbiological contaminants in food that could also be dealt with in the same scientific way. And maybe if we could also find some science in nutrition, it might also be possible to deal with it in that way. But sometimes it's very difficult to find science in nutrition. I'm saying that because I'm coming from the dark side, you know. So the light side here with nutrition, they don't like it when I say that. But nevertheless, food chain integration. There's a huge burden of disease from food, both in relation to poor nutritional choices, but also in relation to compromised safety. And globally, this is clearly something that's going on at the global level. So we have a long tradition for international standards in the safety area. Nutrition is often treated differently. In the safety area, there has been some attempts to try to continuously improve the situation, because we have a situation and a level of disease that could be in some way diminished if we did some sensible things. So I think that that would be possible to do both for the safety and for the nutrition side. And therefore, I think the big issue here is maybe we could take some of the examples from the safety side and see if we could transplant that into the nutrition side in the bigger picture. Clearly, we are all in the picture that there is an increased globalization of food trade. There is no separation in the safety area. There's really no need for separation between national and international food safety. We have international standards through the Codex system, and we are only starting to evaluate both the risk and benefits of food. And benefit, clearly, then we are in the nutrition area. So we need to be talking about both the risks and the benefits of different choices in relation to food. The whole international food chain integration is also supported by some of these standardization thoughts in the safety and in the nutrition area. This is just to give you a picture of the problems that we are facing. This is the only good data that we have in the safety area is in relation to microbiology. And this is then in developed countries. The data here are from the U.S., so you can say that you have 2 deaths per 100,000 in a developed country that is caused by microorganisms, and only certain diseases by microorganisms in food. So if you added the chemical disease burden, you would probably get a significantly higher number. But this is high enough, I think. So you have like 5,000 people dying in the U.S. from microorganisms in food that could easily be prevented, most of them. So in developing countries, there is a lot more diarrhea, both food and waterborne, and it's estimated that we have cases almost as many as we have people per year, and that we have here 1.8 million kids dying every year from diarrhea. Again, that's only one part of the safety problems that you can have. And then clearly there are other foodborne diseases that are microbiological than diarrhea, and there are a lot of chemical substances also. So again, we have to increase the number. So we're talking about significant numbers of people actually dying that we could prevent if we did sensible things. Now, internationally, it was accepted when they developed the WTO system. It was accepted that we need to look at the sanitary and phytosanitary area, so they did the SPS agreement. And members has a right to take measures necessary to protect the human health in their country. But international standards should be according to FAO Codex, FAO WTO Codex Sanitize Commission, and that has been clearly stated in the SPS agreement. And the interesting thing here is what I underline there, that when we have a problem with substantial investment in exporting countries, in the poor countries, actually the SPS agreement tells the countries that it's not good enough just to block at the border. You have to go to the poor countries and help them solve the problem so that they can export to you. That will help economy in the exporting country, that will help health in the exporting country, and it will actually also, in the end, help health and therefore also economy in the importing countries. But it's interesting that this is actually clearly stated in the SPS agreement, and I think lots of people don't know that, and lots of countries don't do this. There are also examples that countries are actually doing this. So in food safety area, there's been a lot of discussion in the past of what we've been doing. In the past, just to give you a picture, lots and lots of billions of dollars have been wasted on totally senseless testing. So the system was that we go out and test a lot of food because the more we test, the better, and we can really prevent things. And what they looked for were the total number of microorganisms in the food, and you have systems to do that and reporting systems, and it means absolutely nothing in relation to prevention of disease. This was realized after 30 to 40 years. You know, the safety folks, even if they do science, they are also a bit thick. So they don't really get the picture very quickly, but after 30 to 40 years, we got the picture. Maybe we should try to look at whether there is a specific link between the disease and what is in the food. Maybe that would be a good idea. I really don't understand why it took us so long. But so if we could do that, then we could also define that if we have this problem, we could define an intervention, and then we could find out if we actually have an effect of doing that intervention. And then we could then set new targets when we are able to do something down to 5. Maybe we could also be able to do something down to 1, and so on. So that's what I'm saying, the race to the bottom. We can actually increase our safety in food over time, and we should do so. Then I'll use a Danish example. Of course, it has to be a Danish example because, as you know, the Danes are the biggest exporters of pork and also the smartest people on the face of the earth. And I don't know if these two things are linked together. But in Denmark, they found out maybe we could take salmonella as a big thing. Okay, it's one of the biggest problems microbiologically in food. Okay, maybe we could link what is in the salmonella types that are in the food, in the animals, with the ones in the food, with the ones in the people. So that if we have an outbreak or a number of people sick, we would not only know that, oh, they were sick from salmonella, we would also know that they were sick from salmonella from pigs. Okay, not in Denmark, of course, because we're exporting all the pigs. So let's say poultry or eggs or something like that. But because technically you can type the salmonella types, and in the future you'll be able to type all different types of microorganisms with the genetic technology, then you can actually link them back and find out and make a source attribution model, which means that you can point out what's the problem and do something about it. And they have done that in Denmark for some time, and other countries are now starting to look at that. So you can actually separate into pork and beef and chicken and eggs and all that. The whole disease burden from salmonella can be separated into that. So they did that. Now, big problem in the egg sector. It was clearly recognized that there is a problem. We know that we have outbreaks. Recently in the U.S., there was the biggest recall ever with 500 Was it 500 million eggs that they recalled? 500 million eggs. I kid you not. That it's a huge amount of eggs. And of course, the egg production system in U.S. and in many other countries will say, but Salmonella is a natural bacterium. We can't do anything about it. And by the way, if you cook the eggs well, there's not a problem. The industry will say that. You could also say that maybe you should actually look at whether there is a possibility of doing something on the farm so that we don't have all these salmonella in the chicken. So what they started to do in Denmark some time ago, they said, okay, let's have a surveillance system so that we find out what's in the chicken, because the chicken becomes the hen and the hen is laying the eggs. So if we can prevent it in the chicken and then in the hen, we can maybe also prevent it in the egg. So they had a surveillance system. Doesn't really matter what the system is, but that's just to show you that they set up a surveillance system. And this was done by industry and government in Denmark. So, and just to show you how smart the Danes are, this is how they took the samples. So you just put a sock on a on a boot, and then you walk around in the herd there, and then or a flock when it's then you can actually take that sock, and then you can. It's very interesting, yes. But what they did was, okay, they investigated what is the situation, and then they did something in the flocks where they had problems. So they basically killed the salmonella hens, which meant that in the end, when they started in 1997, 60% of the 5,000 human cases of salmonella that year was lowered to, in 2006, that there was only 1,600 cases of salmonella, so in general it went down, and only 6% of these came from eggs. So it meant that what they did in the egg production actually did work. Here you can just see how it went down over the years, and it's a significant reduction that also corresponds to a significant reduction in human health and in cost. Because what we have to do then to persuade the rest of the system that maybe this makes sense is also to look at what are the health costs involved in salmonella in the food chain. And of course, they try to do that in Denmark, and even if they're smart, they didn't actually include one of the important ones, and it says here, not included in the present cost model, death. That's because the Danes couldn't find out how do you value a human life. And although that's a very difficult discussion, they should have done it in some way. You know, then just saying, okay, it's a Dane, it's only $1,000. If it's a Canadian, it's probably $5,000. But at least they should have done something, because now it's missing, and death is really, you know, the worst case outcome, and it is happening from salmonella. We know that. Lots of people die from salmonella, and we know that it's preventable. So the figures that they have here don't even include some sort of estimation of death. And still, the saved costs that they had there were significantly higher than the cost of the program. So cost of program, 25 million euro. You shouldn't look at Danish kroner. That's an obsolete old currency that will probably be voted out of Denmark at some stage. But even if they're smart in Denmark, they're also a little bit slow, as I said, so it takes them a long time to accept the euro. But let's just look at the euro. So the saved cost here, depending on what fraction of salmonella cases are reported, because if it's a very low fraction that are really reported, actually the saved cost is a lot higher. But depending on that, we are still seeing, even if 20% of all cases are reported, which is very unrealistic, we're still having a significant cost reduction by doing this. So you could say, do we want to continuously improve the situation, and could we do that? I believe that we could do that by using the data that we actually have. We know that we can use new genetic fingerprints to do the same type of thing that we did for salmonella for other bacteria. We can define interventions. We can share the experience over borders. Maybe they can do some of the same things that they did in Denmark in the U.S. Maybe. Even if they're very afraid to go to the farm level because they are generally shot if government goes to the farm, then they could maybe at some stage try to look at how could we do something at the farm level. set targets, and then continuously improve the situation. And then involve industry, and in this case study of the Danish case study, clearly they did involve industry, and industry played and actually financed most of the whole program. So the supply chain linkages clearly is realized by the industry that actually we need to look at this at a global way, and if we want food standard systems throughout the value chain, we actually need to have the discussion also at the global level. And we need to include other issues than just the technical issues, in this case about the safety. Consumers should be involved, and actually I think it was mentioned also by other speakers here now that that the consumer choice but also the consumer interaction will be driving the agenda. On the other hand, I would say that it's very important not to base all management or presumed consumer on presumed consumer choice, and the GM, the genetically modified food debate in Europe, is a very good example of how you should not just say, oh, it's just up to the consumer to do this or that. You have to fully inform the consumer about what the issues are and what the issues are not. And there are no health issues with GM food at the moment. Doesn't mean that it couldn't be in the future, but there are not. And we have to be able to inform the general public. We shouldn't just say, oh, but they don't want it, they don't like it. We have to inform them so that they have a real choice. So lowering disease burden, I believe, is possible also at the international level if we're trying to take the experiences from one country to other countries maybe. And if we are basing our activities on a risk-based framework instead of the old, stupid, let's just test our way out of the problems way that we know doesn't work. So we have to really look at what is the problem, analyze the risk, and come up with sensible solutions. So food contamination events clearly have international implications. Policies have to be also discussed at the international level. At the moment, they are not really. And the capacity to estimate the combination of risk and benefit in food is a big new area that hasn't been looked into at all at the international level. There are only a few American studies that actually goes into this, and it's a starting science that we should really be supporting, I think. So we need an international, agreed, accepted international framework where we can assess both risk and benefit and share experiences of how to move things forward and lower the risk and increase the benefit of the food. So aid for trade, we should improve economic development by using a sensible international trade system. And we could actually have improved quality and safety both in exporting and importing countries if such a system was supported by maybe some of all the money that the rich countries are now using to support their own agriculture. The amount of money in the EU and the US going to support agriculture is staggering, and it's incredible, and it doesn't go anywhere to help anything apart from the farmers. So maybe there should be some new thinking about how we could do that in a bigger framework. Thank you.